You know what's funny about the airline seat you're sitting in? 20 years ago, the space you paid extra for last month used to come standard. I'm Tower, and this is AT's on Radio Hangar. Let me set the scene for you. It's roughly 2004. You board a domestic flight on a major US carrier, and your standard economy seat has about 34 inches of pitch. That's the distance from any point on your seat to the same point on the seat in front of you. 34 inches? Not luxurious, but reasonable. You could cross your legs if you weren't too tall. You could open a laptop without performing yoga. Fast forward to today, that same seat, 28 to 29 inches of pitch on some carriers, 5 inches. Gone. And here's the thing, those 5 inches didn't just disappear, they got repackaged, given a premium name, and sold back to you for an upcharge. Today's segment is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins built to mark the milestones, discipline, and pride behind every step in flight. From first solo to airline transport pilot, every coin tells a story. AviationSoul.com. So here's what you need to know. The story of shrinking airline seats is not just a story about discomfort. It's one of the most successful product redesign strategies in modern transportation history. And whether you fly the airlines, fly general aviation, or both, understanding what happened here tells you a lot about where commercial aviation is headed. Let's start with the economics. When a carrier like United or American reduces seat pitch by just 1 inch across its narrowbody fleet, that creates room for roughly 6 additional seats on a Boeing 737 or an Airbus A320, 6 seats. Multiply that by the number of aircraft in a fleet, multiply that by daily departures, multiply that by average ticket revenue, and you're looking at hundreds of millions of dollars annually for 1 inch. But cramming more seats into the tube was only phase one. Phase two was the real stroke of genius, if you want to call it that. The airlines looked at the space they had just taken away from everyone and said, "What if we sell some of it back?" That's how you got economy plus, premium economy, extra legroom seats, preferred seating, comfort plus. The names vary by carrier, but the concept is identical. You're paying a premium, sometimes $20 to $80 per segment on domestic flights, sometimes $200 or more on international routes, to get back roughly what you used to have for free. 33 to 35 inches of pitch, the old standard economy seat rebranded as an upgrade. And passengers are paying it in enormous numbers. The ancillary revenue numbers from the International Air Transport Association tell the story. Global airline ancillary revenue hit over $100 billion in recent years. Seat selection and upgrades are a massive slice of that pie. Delta alone reported billions in premium product revenue and their Comfort Plus cabin, which is essentially old-school economy with a few extra inches and a free snack, is one of their highest margin products. Now, I'm not here to tell you the airlines are villains. This is a business, and business is optimized, but the headline doesn't tell the whole story, and the story matters if you're a pilot who thinks about how the aviation industry works. Here's why the seat density game has reached a point where it's driving regulatory conversation. The Federal Aviation Administration has been under pressure from Congress to set minimum seat dimensions, not for comfort, but for safety. The question is straightforward: in an emergency evacuation, can passengers egress quickly enough from seats that are narrower and more tightly packed than the seats the aircraft was originally certified with? The FAA conducted evacuation tests a few years back and concluded that current configurations met the 90-second evacuation standard. But critics, including some aviation safety researchers, pointed out that those tests used relatively young, fit participants who knew the drill was coming. Not exactly a representative sample of the boarding population on a Tuesday afternoon flight from Atlanta to Orlando. Congress passed a provision in a recent FAA reauthorization bill directing the agency to establish minimum seat dimensions. The FAA has been working on that. But progress has been, let's say, measured. As of now, there is no federally mandated minimum seat pitch or width for passenger comfort or egress in the United States. The market, not the regulator, is setting the floor, and the market's floor keeps dropping. For those of you flying general aviation, you might be listening to this and thinking, well, this doesn't affect me, and you're right, sort of. Nobody's shrinking the seats in your Cessna 172 or your Cirrus SR22, but this trend does affect you in a couple of indirect ways. First, the premium economy phenomenon is actually driving some high net worth travelers toward private aviation and charter. When a first class ticket costs $3,000 or $4,000 and still doesn't guarantee a great experience, the value proposition of a charter flight or fractional ownership starts to look different. That's good for the general aviation ecosystem. More demand for business aviation means more investment in FBOs, more fuel availability, more political support for GA airports. Second, and this is more philosophical, the airline seat story is a case study in how aviation regulation lags behind industry practice. The same dynamic plays out in general aviation. The FAA often moves slower than the market, whether we're talking about seat sizes, ADS-B mandate implementation, or basic med. Understanding that pattern helps you anticipate where the rules are going and plan accordingly. Let me give you one more number that puts this in perspective. Spirit Airlines, before its financial troubles, operated some configurations with as little as 28 inches of pitch. 28 inches for reference. The average adult male inseam is about 31 inches. You are physically unable to sit without your knees contacting the seat in front of you. That's not an opinion, that's geometry. And yet Spirit filled those seats because the fare was low enough that passengers made the trade. Discomfort for savings, that transaction, repeated millions of times across the industry, is what funds the entire upsell model. You need the base product to be uncomfortable enough that the upgrade feels worth it, but not so uncomfortable that people stop flying. It's a razor-thin line. And the revenue management teams at every major carrier walk it with surgical precision. The international carriers have taken this to an even more refined level. Some airlines now offer 4 or 5 distinct cabin classes on a single aircraft. You've got basic economy at the back with minimal pitch, regular economy with a little more, premium economy with substantially more, plus some service perks. Business class with lie-flat seats and first class with suites. The airplane has become a flying department store with products at every price point. And the pitch differential between the cheapest and most expensive seat on the same aircraft can be over 50 inches. This affects you if you're planning airline travel for a flyout or a ferry trip positioning. Know what you're buying. The base economy fare on most carriers now comes with a randomly assigned seat, no ability to choose, and the likelihood that you're getting the tightest configuration on the airplane. If you want what economy used to be, you're paying for it separately. Here's something else worth noting. The seat manufacturers have gotten remarkably creative. Companies like Recaro and Collins Aerospace are designing seats that are thinner, with less padding specifically so that airlines can reduce pitch while arguing that knee space is preserved because the seat back doesn't extend as far on paper. The living space might be similar. In practice, you're sitting on a harder, thinner seat for 3.5 hours. The engineering is impressive. The experience is debatable. Where does this go from here? The trend is pretty clear. Airlines will continue to segment the cabin because it works. Premium economy is the fastest growing cabin class in international aviation. Passengers have demonstrated they'll pay to escape the base product. And as long as that's true, the incentive is to keep the base product just uncomfortable enough to drive upgrades. The regulatory question remains open. If the FAA does eventually mandate minimum dimensions, it could force a partial reconfiguration of some fleets, which would reduce capacity and likely raise base fares. That's the trade-off nobody in Washington wants to talk about explicitly. More space per passenger means fewer passengers per flight means higher prices for everyone. For now, the airlines have found a formula that generates enormous revenue, and until either the regulator or the market forces a change, those 5 inches aren't coming back. They've been monetized, they're a product now, and business is very good. That story comes via Simple Flying, and it's one of the better breakdowns of the cabin economics that I've seen. You can find us at RadioHanger.com. I'm Tower. Fly comfortable, even if you have to pay extra for it these days. See you next time.